Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, this is not Brad Sesmat, people. This is Paula Bovin, a very feisty Paula Bovin. I am filling in for Brad, who is, I think he's getting ready to attend his son's wedding, which is very exciting. But this is indeed the Brad Sesmat Show. We are streaming live on sports360az.com and, of course, my favorite place, azcentralsports.com. And you know what we're going to talk about, and I'm going to get into this UA game in a second, but it is a little bit warm in the studio right now here at the lovely Skyview Studios, and I do not want to end up looking like Sean Miller did last night. That storyline went all over social media, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you haven't been on your computer or iPhone or anything else lately. Poor Sean Miller. I don't know if it was the anxiety of the game. Maybe it was very humid in there. He went through, he soaked his shirt. It was like a wet t-shirt contest in Providence last night. And the student managers had to go get him a new shirt at halftime because it was kind of disgusting. I got to be honest, but you know, what are you going to do? You're a head coach of a major program. You're in the NCAA tournament. You're perspiring through your shirt and everybody's talking about it on social media. More important, though, let's get into what happened to UA. They go to Providence. They lose to Wichita State, 65-55. Yes, yes, yes. I went on social media yesterday and predicted a UA 10-point victory. So, sue me. I'm sorry. I'd seen this team. I thought people were underestimating. What I underestimated is the value of some experienced seniors on that team, on the Wichita State team, as well as guys who really want to be a part of something bigger. And as cheesy as that sounds, I really think that made the difference yesterday. And I don't even want to get into the seeding. I know this is a popular topic. Wichita State was seeded 11. I think Arizona's 5, right, Eric? I think they're a 5 seed. You can't go that direction. And here's why to me. The NCAA tournament this year, there is so much parity that you go from 5 to 11. I really believe these teams are interchangeable. So I'm not buying the whole thing, you know, the Wildcats caught a bad break, because I think that's the way the field of talent is this year. What I really believe is simply that Wichita State is built better to succeed in this tournament. And you know, as sports writers, we hate cliches. We hate the cheesiness that tends to come out of these things. We try to avoid it. But what Greg Marshall said after the game, something the effect of, hey, at Wichita State, we don't get 4-star, we don't get 5-star recruits. We try to get guys who want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And I know that's like right out of Hoosiers or one of those sports movies. But I think in this day and age of one and done in college basketball, you've got to find guys who want to be part of that bigger picture, who believe in the team unity. And I was watching, there's been a great series on one of the premium channels on Gonzaga this season, and they followed them along. And this was a team, Gonzaga, that also won in the tournament yesterday, that was a lower seed. But all you heard about was these guys talking about being together, about sacrifices. And I'm not saying that Arizona is not that team, because I know they have a lot of good guys who work hard. I don't think people respect and appreciate the challenges of being a college-level athlete. But I think you have to take it one more step. And I thought at times Alonzo Trier looked like a guy who was showcasing his skills for the NBA, you know? And I get it. When you're that talented and you're one of the few, one in a million, who have a chance to play at the next level, I think if you're 18 or 19, that motivation and feeling comes natural. But I think the true winners in college basketball are the ones that can find that mix. And I think Miller has done it in the past, of the one and dones, plus guys who are willing to sort of sacrifice for the team. And, you know, I remember those stories of the last couple years of UA teams, of these guys living together during the summer, like practically the whole team had apartments right next to each other. And, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to maybe diving for a loose ball, of not wanting to embarrass your teammate, whatever it is, whatever that motivation is, that cheesy kind of stuff makes sense. So I was totally off on my prediction of UA. I have a lot of respect for Wichita State, and I'm interested to see what happens in this tournament. Eric, were you surprised where this thing went last night? This
no,
game?
No. Actually, and actually, U of A was a 6 seed, not a 5.
Six,
so I'll correct you on that, but the minor little detail. I wasn't surprised because U of A was an underdog in the game. I don't know if you saw that, but the line.
Right.
I know you and I sort of keep our eye on
we
these
sort of
betting lines just from time to time. But U of A, they were the sexier pick going in. But last night proved they were not the better team. And you could tell when Sean Miller takes a timeout less than 1 minute into the game.
57 seconds, yeah. 57
that
seconds.
Is a huge, huge red flag. I mean, that's something you see very, very rarely in any sport. And there was they just didn't have that it factor. The thing that I saw, Paula, last night that I didn't see last year and the year before with U of A basketball in the tournament. There was no sense of urgency, and there was no TJ McConnell, no Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. When things started to get a little bit sideways, they sort of just fell into the trap. Like,
right.
There was no, they didn't, they fell behind, and they'd make a little run, and then all it'd take is one or two Wichita State plays, and boom, they're back down by 15 or 16 points. They were just never able to sustain any sort of offensive or defensive consistency. And I put it last night on Twitter, and I got some people that kind of disagreed with me. But I think they also, the last couple of years, being a higher seed, had the benefit of traveling from Tucson to San Diego, Tucson to Portland, Tucson
right.
to LA. Traveling from Tucson to Providence
right.
gets these kids out of their routine. Like during the season, They don't have to travel like that. I know U of A plays in Hawaii from time to time and things like that. But when you get these student athletes sort of out of their routine, you know, they're going all the way across the country. They're playing at a weird time. It didn't surprise me the way the game started, how it ended. Because you could just tell that U of A mentally just wasn't there last night.
No, it's so true. You're right, Eric. You could feel it from the beginning, and I never thought, oh, they're coming back. This is where they turn the corner. I think it must be unbelievably hard being a college coach when you're recruiting. You are obviously recruiting for all those great things you see on the court, but there is that sort of intangible toughness thing. And, you know, I even think about last year, as much as people were sort of on Stanley Johnson at times, it took his game a while to develop. He had that toughness that I knew would translate to the next level. And I just kind of felt like it wasn't there last night. And I have a great respect for Tarzewski and all he's accomplished there. What he's been in more games or won more games or whatever than any other player at U of A. But I don't know if he's that guy that kind of lifts them, rallies the team to the next level.
And I think, Paula, his career has been one of the more disappointing. I know he's played in a lot of games,
sure.
And I understand that he's made progress. But, I mean, you see that guy. He's 7'1".
Right.
He's chiseled. He's stronger and taller than every other player on the floor, playing against guys that are 6'9", 6'10".
Right.
And he averaged 9 points and 9 rebounds. It's okay. It's
right.
fine. But he should be a player that is a 15-10 night in, night out. I mean, he looks the part. He just always doesn't play the part.
It's true. And I you know, someone in the NBA is going to give him at least a
of
shot
course.
Or look,
because
you know, everybody believes that they can be the guy that fixes whatever is wrong. And he's obviously Tarzewski's been a very valuable piece of that puzzle.
Defensively, he was outstanding.
Yeah,
most of his career.
But and it makes you appreciate guys like the TJ McConnell, who is blessed with athletic skills, but not what a lot of people thought would take him to the NBA. And he may be playing on a bad team, but he's an example of that four-year guy who gave so much to that team, even if he wasn't defined as someone who's going to be real successful in college, you know, simply because his work ethic, his toughness, and that mental thing I talked about where, you know, you recruit the right guys. And I don't know if you caught it, Eric, before the game, they cut into the locker room. Greg Marshall was talking to his team, and he basically said something the effect of, you know, this isn't that hard to win this game. You know what I mean? You don't have to play your most perfect game. He clearly saw something, I think, in UA. And you were at the Pac-12 tournament, and I don't know if you picked up on this, but there were times Sean Miller was almost, I felt like, preparing us for the fact that this team might lose in the postseason. He had some phrases,
especially after the Colorado game.
Right.
I mean, the second half of that, they played so well the first half and so poorly the second half.
Right.
And he did make some comments like, well, if we play like this, we're not going to have a long run next week in the NCAA tournament. And, I mean, with Wichita State, that's the perfect team where they have a veteran backcourt, and these guys have played in huge games.
Right.
They've played in Elite Eights. They've made it to the Final Four. So for them to go play Arizona, I mean, it's just not – there's not the wow factor because these guys have already been in the tournament, and they know how to play on this big stage.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think next time that I put together my bracket, I'm going to look under KenPom's defensive efficiency statistic and pick teams based on that.
They were lights out defensively.
Yeah, and
they
Wichita
were so good.
And Wichita State was number one in the country in defensive efficiency. And I know that was one of the things Sean Miller had seen and recognized and was concerned about. And I don't know if I've ever seen an opponent make an Arizona team work that hard on defense. Every shot, I thought, Eric, was just they were having to put out as much as they could. So that was a pretty fascinating matchup last night. I know UA fans are very disappointed. In this era of college basketball, you can fix that in one season with the right recruits, as long as you've got that right mix we were talking about. And I know Sean Miller's going to hit the recruiting trail hard. He talked about that a little bit after the game. And, don't be too sad for Sean Miller. This is clearly a guy who's had a lot of success. Think about this. This is how good he's been. The last double-digit loss for U of A, February 27, 2013.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
It's
I mean,
ridiculous.
That's just domination. And so,
and Ray Smith, one of their best players, one of their incoming freshmen, missed the whole season with a knee injury. So,
and they had injuries throughout the year,
and
right?
And whatever happens with Trier, I mean, they could, like you said, it doesn't, especially with Sean Miller and the way he recruits, it could be a quick fix. And the most interesting thing for me is the U of A fans are so disappointed. They were 25-9.
Right.
I mean, you know how many teams around the country would pray to be 25-9?
Which, by the way, was their record when they won the 1997 national title. So it just goes to show you 25-9 can mean different things. And obviously, I think teams are playing a few more games now. But still, it's pretty amazing. All right, we have got a great show. In addition to all this UA talk, we're going to talk a little bit of ASU. ASU women's head basketball coach Charlie Turner-Thorne is going to look at their game tonight. This afternoon. This is very nice of her to come on board when they have a game a little bit later. New Mexico State, that will be at Wells Fargo Arena. We'll get into that and more here on the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports360AZ.com. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm Paula Bovin, filling in for Brad Sesmatt. I guess I should pronounce his name right if I'm going to fill in for him. Here on Sports360AZ.com. And, you know, we were talking about the NCAA tournament games yesterday and the teams that really seem to play together, to really make those sacrifices, like Wichita State, are the ones that are excelling. And right now I want to talk to a coach who I believe has one of those teams, Charlie Turner-Thorne. They are playing New Mexico State in their sub-regional opening round game this afternoon at Wells Fargo Arena. Charlie, thank you for coming on. I know game time is probably, about 6 hours away or so. So thank you.
Yeah, walkthrough is about 10 minutes away. But no, thanks for having me, Paula. Appreciate it.
We'll make it fast so you can get out there. I was just talking up Wichita State last night. I was so impressed by their seniors, and there were so many. You can tell this team just makes sacrifices for one another. They've talked about what a close-knit group they are. And as sports writers, we tend to find those phrases kind of cheesy. You know, we tend to avoid them because it sounds so cliche. But when I've talked to you and I've seen your team, I sense that this is a team willing to sacrifice just about anything and is pretty close-knit. Is that fair?
It's very accurate, Paula. And it sounds very cliche, I'm sure, to fans and sports writers alike, but it is the essence of what helps teams be great, you know, and you at every level, you know, you look at NFL, NBA, college, you know, all the best teams just talk about, you know, they win championships because they were so connected, you know, and how they played for each other, not with each other. And that is definitely who we strive to be every day. And it has separated our team. You know, we're kind of this undersized team of, you know, players that just kind of this has been 3 years in the making for us with this group in terms of just, you know, getting a little better every year and just, you know, working hard and really being committed to outworking other teams and not necessarily sit back and, oh, you know, it's okay, we've got our two 25-point-a-game players and stuff like that. So It's so funny that you bring up Wichita State. I have to say that I called home real quick last night. My husband's like, "Did you see the game? Oh, they're just playing like Sun Devil swarming defense. It's like you guys are out there playing them." You know, it was. I thought that was really cute. I mean, he's not a basketball player, but he's watched his share, and he made the comparison in his own mind,
right?
Which is what we're planning on doing at 4:30 p.m. at Wells Fargo Arena today. Paula is just, you know, playing obviously great team basketball and outworking our opponent.
Well, and you mentioned it defensively, and you're right. I mean, your team really makes opponents work hard for most shots. But offensively, I think that sort of unselfishness shows in your box score, because when I've had people look at sort of your scoring leaders, there's not a 20-pointer. You know, there's a lot of 10 and 9s and 8-point a game, and I would imagine that's a little bit indicative of the kind of unselfishness on offense. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's kind of what it seems like.
Definitely. I mean, sometimes we're too much so. We're mm-hmm. like, you guys, you can't pass up a good shot.
How often do you hear a coach say that? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, it's funny with this team. You know, they don't, through the season, Paul, I've commented on this a couple times, they don't like when we said, okay, come on, get the ball to Sophie or something. It's like, you know, and Sophie doesn't like, no, we know when it's our turn to shoot. Or, you know, it's like, no, we know when we have something good. I mean, they just really... In particular, this team just really, they're just, that's just who they are, you know, how they're made. Sometimes we would like to, say, hey, can we just get more touches for these couple players? that didn't go over well with them. And, you know, obviously balance is good. All three teams in our region, Paula, are very balanced, you know, especially New Mexico State. You have almost 5 people in double figures, and Wisconsin, Green Bay, same thing. And Tennessee, of course, has a lot of talent. So there you go. You know, you're in the NCAA tournament. You're playing great teams. And lo and behold, all of them are balanced.
We're talking with ASU women's head basketball coach Charlie Turner Thorne. The Sun Devils play New Mexico State today, Wells Fargo Arena. That game is at 4:30. Check it out. If you have not been to an ASU women's game, you'll really respect how hard they play. I guess, which brings me to my next question, Charlie. I know because your team expends so much energy, it looked like a little bit late this season that they may have been running out of gas. Is that something fans should be concerned about, or do you feel like they've had a chance to sort of rejuvenate here in the last week?
We definitely had a chance to rejuvenate. And, you know, I think our fans definitely, you know, saw it and understood it when we were on the road for 4 of the last 6 weeks, played the top teams in our conference, had a much, much tougher schedule. We had a much tougher schedule just playing the top teams and on the road, you know, on the road. So, yeah, you know, we went to Seattle like, yeah, let's win a championship. We were kind of faking it. I mean, we were just gassed. You know, we really, you know, this last week and a half has been amazing for us just to regroup, get extra rest, get extra practice. Because that was the other thing down the second half of the season. We really, we're, like you said, we're a great energy team. We work really hard. We are fun to watch. But that, you know, that takes its toll. So as a coach, we got to limit practice, right? We got to make sure we're getting great rest and recovery. We didn't practice a lot the second half of Pac-12, and we desperately needed to get in the gym and just work on things. And that's, you know, you ask our team, they said the same thing in the press conference. Like, man, we needed to practice, and, you know, we needed rest too. So we got both, and we're excited. We're excited for today.
Just a few more things, and I'll let you go. I know you have a team waiting for you. Sophia Bruner, I saw her when she first came to ASU, and obviously very talented, but there's been such growth in her game. What to you has been her biggest stride since she's been here?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I like to think she's gotten better at everything.
Right.
We, you know, the dislocating her ankle in Thanksgiving weekend really, you know, slowed her down, Paula.
Sure.
I mean, that was something that, you know, we thought we might have lost her for the season, and thank God that we did not. We got her back about 5 weeks after that. And, you know, I think... You know, we'll see after the season if we're going to have to do any work on it. But you know, she's just such a tough kid. And I think she was really prepared this season to really open it up on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. In one of our exhibition games against Texas, I mean, she hit 4 threes. And then when she got hurt and, you know, we had to kind of obviously get her back healthy and back in, I mean, we got away from that stuff. But keep your eyes open for that in the postseason. We've had, you know, now we've had a little bit of time in the gym. She's shooting the three again. So I think, you know, some of it really actually didn't even show this season as much as it should have, like her perimeter game. You know, she's just, obviously she gets better defensively and tougher, but we were really excited for her to play more four, you know, shifting Quinn over to the five. But the injury did sort of impact that, to be honest. And yet, you know, we'll see here in postseason. Hopefully it'll show a little bit more.
Did you, when you've gone out on the recruiting trail, Charlie, and I know that the program has had so much success, when you are getting recruits to come to ASU, what do you think, what is luring them there? Has it been the success of the program? Is it the university? When you're getting student-athletes to come to play for your team, what do you think are the best selling points?
You know, I think there's a lot of programs out there that have great universities and they have all the bells and whistles and resources. And, you know, we tell everybody that we recruit, we have all that.
Right.
You know, we have all that. And, you know, like Stanford or Tennessee or Connecticut or Baylor, whoever else, Notre Dame. But we feel the thing that separates us is our culture and our people and just how much we care about them beyond basketball, how much we're committed to growing them as leaders, you know, not just, you know, as athletes. And also how much we care about their academic careers, which I think is really shown in terms of us being seventh in the nation with our team GPA and the only BCS school in the nation to be ranked in the top 25 for 2 years in a row. So, you know, we have a lot of things like that. Like, you know, what does that mean? Obviously, you know, we are a little different, you know, and we really, really care.
Absolutely. And last thing, Charlie, just kind of looking forward, are you feel like you guys have some momentum as far as recruiting, as far as sort of building on this season? Obviously,
Paula,
the season has a way to go.
But this class, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this class mm-hmm. coming in, I mean, on paper, by far the best class we've ever had.
Wow.
And, I mean, can really, really, really score. So we knew losing the five seniors that we're losing, we had to really go out and thankfully, the 2016 class was one of the best we've ever seen, and we got the kids we wanted. So we are so excited.
That's awesome.
So, you know, we fully expect to stay where we're at and you know, sustain this high level of success. So, hey, I've got to go, Paula. Yep. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, Charlie, we will catch up with you later. That is Charlie Turner-Thorne, ASU women's basketball coach. Want to remind people they play this afternoon, New Mexico State, 4:30, Wells Fargo Arena. Obviously, she was in a hurry, which it's game day. That was pretty awesome that she came to join us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show.
Always, Paula, one of the underserved and not talked about nearly enough programs/teams in this community. I mean, every year they're good.
Right.
Some years they're very, very good.
Right.
Most years they're at least good to very good, and they just kind of fly under the radar amongst all the other things that are happening here in the Valley. But she's,
yeah, I mean, and it's
Charlie is such a, not only a great, great coach, but she's a wonderful person.
Just a pro.
So.
And it
she is
a pro. It's women's basketball, and this is the fate of women's basketball, unless maybe you live in Connecticut or a few other places. And the reality is early on when she was winning, every storyline was about, oh, Charlie, how she manages this with, you know, children or the, you know, the wife and the mother and, oh, and Charlie's pregnant. I mean, those were the storylines. Now it is just about what a great basketball coach she is, and that's what the story should be. I think women's basketball overall has made big strides, and frankly, one of the problems for many years was there was just not great coaching at the high school level, and it is not a reflection of who was in those positions. It was a reflection, frankly, of athletic directors at high schools not caring enough about the hire to put good and accomplished people in those positions. That's starting to change. You're starting to see better players come out. And Charlie Turner-Thorne has done a big thing in this community and in the state about helping the sport grow. So
over 400 wins Think about that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
She has like 420 some odd wins. It's just insane.
In college sports, it's hard to dominate. Yeah. It doesn't matter what you're coaching. All right, coming back, this is a topic near and dear to my heart because I grew up a White Sox fan. It is an absolute mess right now. Out there in Glendale, which is where they have their spring training, Camelback Ranch is just out there, a beautiful facility. Insanity is going on regarding Adam LaRoche, his son. A 14-year-old son has divided the team. You've heard a little bit about it. There have been some new developments coming up with that today. We'll get that in just a minute. We'll talk about it on the Brad Sesmatt Show here on Sports 360 AZ. Welcome back to the show. I am Paula Bovin, filling in for Brad Sesmatt here on the Brad Sesmatt Show, Sports360AZ.com. All right, we've moved on from the Arizona game for a while. This story really bugs me. I grew up in Chicago. I was one of the rare, at the time, White Sox fan. Just grew up on the south suburb in the south suburbs. You hated the Cubs. Frankly, I still have an issue with saying nice things about them. It's just the way I was brought up. But this White Sox storyline, which I know has been in the news for the past day, Adam LaRoche and leaving the White Sox disgusted because Kenny Williams had the quote-unquote gall to suggest his son, 14-year-old son, shouldn't be in the clubhouse 100% of the time. There have been some, and this concerns me as a White Sox fan, I'm just being totally honest with you, because if you're starting out your season spring training this way, that is a bit concerning, you know, if players are sort of divided about this. But here's what happened today. Bob Nightingale, who's a terrific writer for USA Today, who has been on this show quite a few times, was in the clubhouse today and noticed a couple things. One, let me start from the beginning here with some of these tweets because I think it says a lot. Chris Sale has Adam LaRoche and Drake LaRoche uniforms hanging in his White Sox locker. The lockers and nameplates remain for both of those two. Blake LaRoche autographed his uniform for Chris Sale, said, "Thanks for everything. I'll never forget you." A couple of things like that. But then now when Chris Sale is speaking out and said the wrong guy walked out of that room, meaning teammate Adam LaRoche and not White Sox VP Kenny Williams.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's not good. One more thing. He said that Adam Eaton says that he originally planned to bring his father to the clubhouse today, but in the wake of the LaRoche Sox mess, feels uncomfortable. And now it is coming out that apparently, and I don't know if this is true, but there was something in his contract, Adam LaRoche's contract, that said he could bring his son to the clubhouse 100% of the time. I think we need to hear details of that. Kenny Williams has said, and again, this is from Bob Nightingale, "While I disagree with Chris's assertions today, I certainly have always appreciated his passion." Eric, this sounds like this is going deeper now. This may involve legal issues. The players' union is getting involved. And this is not a good start for a team that had high hopes for this season.
My guess would be if Ken Williams could have rewound the past 3 to 4 days,
right,
he would have just let sleeping dogs lie with this.
Sure.
Because, I mean, not only did this become a little bit of a firestorm, this became a gigantic national crossover sports story that's
right.
appearing on the Today Show, that's on the top tabloids, it's at the top of newspaper headlines. I mean, the White Sox have not been good for quite a while.
Yes.
And the whole purpose of what he did was to sort of put the focus back on baseball and not the other things that happen outside of baseball with the White Sox. And now, I mean, it's completely flipped upside down. Now no one's talking about the team. Everyone's talking about this Adam LaRoche situation. And I think the players have a beef. If there was that clause in Adam LaRoche's contract that said he could bring his son around whenever he wanted, then I do think that's a breach, is it not?
It is. And, you know, that's why they have players' unions, which
uh-huh.
they will speak up about it. This is what gets me, though, Eric. One, Kenny Williams has a very solid reputation among players, among executives, among media on the job he has done in Major League Baseball. So, one, would he not have been educated on the fact that that was in his contract? If so, why would he bring that up? That is head-scratching.
And to localize Kenny Williams,
right.
he is Kyle Williams' dad, the
right.
former ASU football player.
Wide receiver. So, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so there's that connection there. And Kyle was obviously a great guy to deal with, too. But the other thing, it's just so hard for me to believe that there were that Kenny Williams would have said something if they're not if there had not been complaints for some players.
Agree.
And these players probably don't want to step forward, and I get that, but I can't imagine a GM taking it upon himself to say something like that unless somebody else was in his ear. So I know I think there's supposed to be some meeting today, not with Williams, but I think they went with Reinsdorf. They went above him to try to get some feedback. So I think this storyline is going to continue to blow up.
There probably was a little bit of a divide in the clubhouse, mm-hmm. and the however many small handful of players that didn't want LaRoche's kid around as much mm-hmm. may have gone to management in confidence. And now Williams is the one that sort of has to fall on the sword. I mean, yesterday Jared and I talked about, you know, regardless of what the legal ramifications of the jargon in the contract is, LaRoche is still the employee.
Right.
And the White Sox are still the employer. So if you want to bring your kids to the Republic every day and your boss said, you know what, you can't do it, you can't do it. I mean, right. they are your supervisor. So I can kind of see both sides of the story. And there was a precedent, I think, because LaRoche's son was around so long and he was so well liked.
Right.
But if you need to cut the cord on this, maybe the only way you can cut it is have to do it ugly, and now this thing has gotten really ugly.
It has, and it's so hard to get my brain around this story because the culture of baseball is so different from any other profession and so different from any other sport. I don't think you would see a child of an athlete hanging out in an NFL locker room as much as this guy does. I understand it's sort of a different vibe in there. I've been in a bunch of the spring training clubhouses this season, including the White Sox, and it's very relaxed. It's very light, especially in the morning. Guys are playing cards. There is a lot of, like, dead time in there. I was in the Colorado Rockies spring training locker room yesterday, and, you know, they're all filling out their NCAA bracket. They're talking about their picks. They're trash-talking the guys from Kentucky or, you know, trash-talking with guys from Seton Hall or whatever. I mean, that was sort of the environment. So I understand how unique it is, but I hate to criticize it because I sound like an awful parent. I don't know if I'd want my kid around me in my work environment 100% of the time.
Even there's quite a bit of a, and there is quite a bit of adult language and
oh, yeah.
guy talk that happens inside Major League Baseball clubhouses.
Absolutely.
And it's odd because, I mean, Drake LaRoche has gone on road trips. And I mean, until this story came out, I think 99% of the public had no idea that
right.
he was such a central figure, such a regular. I mean, did you see he doesn't even really go to a regular school?
Oh, is that
right? Yeah, he's pulled out of school in the spring and in the early parts of the summer so he can travel and be around the team, be around his dad, which is fine. I mean, hey, to each your own.
Right.
But if you're going to set that precedent for him, what happens if there are some other players in the future that say, you know what, I want my son or daughter around the clubhouse all the time. So
that was my next point. Where do you draw the line then? I mean, you couldn't have. I remember the World Series team, the Diamondbacks World Series team, and seeing Finley's young little kids running around the clubhouse. They were these cute, you know, little surfer-looking blonde-haired
sure.
kids.
The Gonzalez triplets.
Gonzalez triplets. But they were there, kind of in and out, and even the older ones were sort of in and out. And it's hard for me to understand a work environment where the kids are there 100% of the time. And I am not judging him at all because, you know, anyone who wants to hang out with their child that much in the world of parents, fathers, and mothers that maybe don't have that connection with their kids or the willingness to spend that time, I applaud him. But if it's in some way impacting your team, and I got to be honest, it feels a little bit like Adam LaRoche is quitting on his team in this one. They can turn it around the other way and say that the White Sox forced him out, but is this your solution to just quit on your team? There are others that are going to be affected by your absence. This is not simply you making a statement. So I can see both sides of this story, and you're right. I don't think it's going to die anytime soon.
And this could have been something if they would have addressed it in the dead of winter.
Right.
Before, I mean, when baseball is so far off the map, now you're in the middle of Cactus League play, you're ramping up to opening day, baseball is back in the forefront along with NFL free agency and March Madness, there would have been a better time where you could have handled this.
Right.
And from a PR standpoint, it probably wouldn't have blown up to the point it is now. I mean, this is the third day that this story has been in the news cycle, and it might continue to go through the weekend for all we know. There are all these new developments, and if there's a huge backlash between a group of players and the White Sox front office, that's just bad karma, and that's just ugly as they're getting ready for opening day. So,
I think it sounds very one-sided right now because Chris Sale has a strong voice, and he's the one willing to speak up, and I'm sure there are players behind the scenes who are, you know, not wanting to be that bad guy, because if they say something, yeah, that is going to divide the locker room, a clubhouse a little bit more. So I think it's sounding more one-sided than it is, and I think there's going to be new information breaking, because there had to be something happening that triggered Kenny Williams to have that conversation, and it was either a player complained or something else. So I think the storyline is not dead by any stretch, and it is like nothing I have heard in the world of Major League Baseball. All right, we're going to make it a little bit lighter this next segment. We are going to talk to one of my friends, my colleague, Bill Kuticoons, with Goody at the Movie. He's going to discuss his critique of a couple movies, including Allegiant and Hello, My Name is Doris. And he had a very cool interview with a popular actress we'll get to in a minute. So I am Paula Bovin. I am filling in for Brad Sesmat here on the Brad Sesmat Show, Sports360AZ.com. That lovely music you are listening to means it is time to come back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. I am filling in for Brad Sesmat here on Sports360AZ.com. We are also streaming live on AZCentralSports.com. That's my site. You should check it out. It's got lots of good things, lots of good content, and you can pick up the show from here. I was just, speaking of music, which I was just listening to, I don't know if anybody has seen this commercial, but I cannot get that song, and I know this is not the title, but it's about, I like pina coladas. You know that awful song from, what was it, the 70s, the 80s? There is a brilliant commercial on right now. It is Spike Lee. It is Charles Barkley, and it is Samuel L. Jackson. They are in a car. I think it's a commercial for a credit card like Visa, and they just break into that song of, I like pina coladas, getting caught in the rain, and got to find the title of that song now. I can't remember. And it is maybe the best thing that has been on during these commercials, or excuse me, during the tournament, which, by the way, has busted out commercials the way the Super Bowl busts out new commercials. I've been really impressed this season. There's been a couple that have been really good, but that one has been in my head because of that stupid song and that they're singing it. So yeah, I've seen a little bit of that on social media. The other story that's been, of course, all over social media, in addition to UA's loss, was what happened to Sean Miller and his poor shirt. I swear, within a couple minutes of the game, he had soaked through that shirt. The cameras caught it. It was all over Twitter. I saw some very funny posts on Facebook, a lot of goofy and kind of funny references to the whole wet T-shirt.
Yeah, there it is, Paula. Wow, that is one really... I mean, that's like he just grabbed it straight out of the washing machine and said, I'm just going to wear this thing.
I know. Look at the score. It's 12-8 at that moment. How does that happen so fast? Somebody, one of the people from the Arizona Daily Star interviewed the student managers on that team, and they said they always bring a second shirt for Miller because of these kind of moments. And it's really interesting because that guy is in phenomenal shape. I don't know if you've read these stories. He's dropped about 40 pounds
since
last season. Yeah, I did.
That's good for him.
Yeah, I know. It's great. He just decided to kind of commit to this lifestyle of healthy eating. He's given up those, what are they called, Ike and Mike's?
Mike and Mike's? Or
whatever. Something, the candy. I don't eat them. He's given up the sweetest.
Yeah, Mike and Ike's.
Mike and Ike's, there we go.
Jared Nielsen.
Thank you, Jared.
Candy consumer, I guess. I don't know.
Giving up the Swedish fish, which is, you know, another one of those bags of candy you buy. And, you know, when I have talked to Miller in the past, one of the things, and you could almost hear the regret in his voice, was how much time he had given to basketball. And he had told me once his wife had commented that he'd hardly seen any of his son's basketball games, but had seen a lot of, obviously, you know, the players, the recruits he has, he's going to that. And there's always a tinge of regret in his voice. And I think he had what, you know, what people like to call a come to Jesus moment after last season, that he's got to start taking care of himself a little bit. So
do you know him?
I know him as much as a reporter can know Sean Miller.
Okay, because he definitely puts himself inside of a basketball box.
Right.
He wants to, and U of A sort of allows him to not have to be as public and visual. I mean, you don't hear him do much media except if it's a national show, and he's not, I doubt you're going to see him on the set at you know, CBS analyzing games now that U of A is out of the tournament. That's just not who he is, and that's totally fine. But
right.
I'm wondering if you have seen a different side of him.
No, I think I've always said he's kind of, I say I hate cliches, and this is a horrible one, but he's kind of a tough nut to crack. I mean, he doesn't like to show that side of him. And that's fine, and the reality is he is great in press conference. I thought in those Pac-12 press conferences he's pretty open. He's not afraid to criticize his team, and he does sort of share his emotions and his frustration and disgust. So when you get him, even in a group setting, Eric, I think he's great. But you're right. There are guys who sort of wear their, you know, hearts on their sleeve or whatever that awful cliche, another awful cliche is. But he is not one of those guys. But, you know, more power to him. And he did open up about sort of this lifestyle change, which surprised me because that's not something he would normally do. But I guess he felt like that was something necessary for his future in this sport, you know.
And nothing bothers me more, Paula, than when I hear people talk about how Sean Miller isn't an elite coach because he hasn't made a Final Four. I mean, it's just that's just like saying Charles Barkley wasn't a great basketball player because he never won an NBA title. It's the things that just drive me crazy, because Sean Miller is an elite coach, and U of A is maybe not an elite program, but they're as close to an elite program as you can get.
Sure.
And that guy is just phenomenal at his job.
Well,
so.
And, you know, I've heard that coming from ASU fans, and I think you would have been happy to have Sean Miller as your coach over all these years.
For sure.
It is that 1-2 punch of being a terrific recruiter, and, you know, most years he's got one of the top recruiting classes in the country, to having his team really well prepared. And this, you know, we can criticize the season in 25-9, their record. As I mentioned before, that was also the record when they won their national title in 97. It wasn't a great year in what happened in this postseason. And I think he really had a sort of a chemistry issue of really getting these guys maybe on the same page, or putting together two halves. I mean, that's been his gripe all year, that they've played maybe one good half. The bottom line, if this is your down year, you're okay. I mean, Duke has sort of had one of those down years too. You know, these programs that are so elite, you expect greatness. And Kentucky maybe having a down year as a number, I think they were a number 4 seed maybe, right?
Yes.
And I know a lot of people have them in their bracket to win the whole thing. So if these are your down years, you're doing fine. And I certainly think that's the case with Sean Miller. I'm sure he'll reevaluate some of the things they did this season. But I also know how many hours he puts in, how many hours these players put in, and sometimes things just don't sink. And sometimes in this era of one and done, and Sean Miller addressed this after the Pac-12 or during the Pac-12 conference at one of the pressers afterward, it is hard in the one and done era to automatically build again, because like for them last year, they had so many guys leave and go into the NBA. Yeah, there was a senior in TJ McConnell, but he also had a lot of young guys leave. So it's hard to rebuild in this era and have success at it. And while this is not the type of season he imagined, I got some emails, people saying, oh, you have a Sean Miller love affair with his game, you know, or how he coaches, and you're blind, you're not seeing this and that. I'm just looking at his track record. So get over it, people. All right. Well, that was the case with Arizona this season. I'm sure they're going to turn it around. I'm going to be heading to Arizona State tonight, or excuse me, this afternoon. Arizona State women play New Mexico State at Wells Fargo Arena, 4:30. Check it out if you have not seen them play before. NCAA atmospheres are fun, and they play hard, and they put a lot of pressure on opposing offenses. So I am Paula Bovin. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Eric and Jared, for getting me through this thing. Brad will be back next week, the father of a married son, which is going to be weird for him, I'm sure. You are listening to Sports360AZ.com, Brad Sesmet Show, also streaming live on azcentralsports.com.